The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, Sirius XM Channel 158. Any which way you could take us in, we appreciate it. Gil Alexander, my little buddy Kelly Bidlin over here.
Hey, buddy.
Down over 100 LBs and counting.
Yeah.
Are we still counting? Yeah.
Counting. Yeah, we're counting.
You know what else is going on? The hair. Your hair is growing.
Got a haircut, bro.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It's a little shorter on the sides.
Oh, but you're still growing it out on top?
No. I tell you, it was the first trim in like, what, 3 months, 4 months?
Soak it in, ladies.
Decided to look a little bit more professional for you today. I don't know if that's the word, but you know, yeah.
This fine content you've experienced the last 30 seconds, courtesy of ProfitX. Proudly brought to you by ProfitX.
Proudly.
On the show today, Fezzik Fridays. You know what that means? Stevie Fezzik in studio. Everything that's on his mind. And I almost had a bone to pick with Stevie today, but he saved himself. He made good on it last night, so there is no bone to be picked.
You know what was great?
Yeah.
Just quick off-air behind the scenes for people. So, you know, Steve sends us, what would you estimate? I don't even know how many words every Friday morning. And we appreciate it. You know, it's some talking points, all that, right?
Though not this morning.
But he was a little late this morning. He just sent it over, so I had to warn Danny. Usually there's an Easter egg of a bet somewhere in between there, so I got to read through the whole thing, find the bets, get it made for graphics. So I had to warn Danny, hey, copy and paste, all this is coming to you. You got to figure out what Steve bet.
Okay.
So Danny's going to give us a breakdown at a break.
A little more than 24 hours away from the Final Four, Special Numbers Investigation reveals, JVT will join us, co-host of Money Moves, which follows not us, but right after Prop Points, which follows us here on the network. So Jonathan Von Tobel, we should probably say his name more than JVT. Jonathan Von Tobel will join us to discuss, as will Dallin Cuff in a little less than a half an hour to discuss the Final Four preview. Dallin has thoughts on both semis and the whole diliosis. Plus Joe Sheehan will come on and talk Major League Baseball with us. And another episode of Are We Sure? I don't know what the questions are. Are we sure?
We haven't. It actually feels like it's been a minute since we've done Are We Sure,
like
right?
Yeah, it feels that way.
Well, that makes sense. We've had NCAA tournament going on Thursdays and Fridays.
We have a tennis play coming up. We had a plus 130 dog winner, easy peasy straight sets yesterday on a Kalinskaya. Tennis pick is coming up. But first, before we do tennis, we got to talk about this straw poll, which came out. We were waiting on this to come out from Timmy Bontemps over there at ESPN. Timmy Good Times, if you want the translation from French. And it is a runaway for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Out of 100 votes, 100 first-place votes, Shai got 88 of them. Now, again, explaining the straw poll, as Kelly did so adeptly the other day, would you like to do it again? To a representation of how actual voting is done?
Sure, this is a representation of what you're going to get for the MVP voting. He pulls 100 media members, and this is from 60 members from local media markets where the teams are located, two from each, and that is what they do for the actual MVP voting. And then 40 other members made up of national media, international media, television, radio, print, everything that you can think of. So a lot of these people, the way that NBA MVP or award voting works in general, a lot of these people don't know whether they're going to be voting or not yet. So I don't know when the NBA tells them that, but this is what Tim does to basically get an idea of what they might be looking at.
And what that idea has given us here, if you are to believe his straw poll 3.0, is that Shai got 88 of the 100 possible first place votes. Victor Wembanyama, as you can see, 63 of the second-place votes. He had 8 of the first-place votes. Nikola Jokic with 3 stray first-place votes as well. I can hear those 3 people screaming. He leads the league in rebounds and assists, for God's sakes. I don't need to know anything else. As you see, he got the most third-place votes. By the way, that would be the only time in Timmy Bontemps' straw polls that Jokic has fallen out of the top 2 since 2022. That just shows you how this dude has dominated this league. This is a horrible result for him in third based on that.
What a loser.
What a loser. The only other stray first place vote went to Jaylen Brown. I don't know if Michael Wilbon was polled, but if he was, that was Michael Wilbon's vote.
I have multiple random quick thoughts, little thoughts on this stuff. That one obviously sticks out. I have a very hard time with someone leaving Jokic off completely 1 through 5. Notice how he got
99 out of 100 votes. I don't know who that person is, but for God's sakes, don't pull him again.
That one's pretty crazy. Once we get to Rookie of the Year, it's even more crazy, which they did Rookie of the Year. It's the first time ever Tim did that.
Before we get to Rookie of the Year, because I know you're so excited to talk about Rookie of the Year, this man can't be bursted out of his chair. He can't wait to tell you what the Rookie of the Year results are. But when we get, so if we go back to those, the straw poll, so Shea basically beats Victor Wembanyama, take it for what it is, by 300 plus points when you rack them up. Now here's, it's exactly 314 points, 958 to 644. Now here is, we've been keeping track of this every day. This is the 65-game rule minimum, which inspired this. And in fact, was why I bet Victor Wembanyama in the first place, right? Because it looked like maybe Shea with his ab injury won't get there. Well, last night, by the way, Shea finally gets his qualification. He is there. He has met the threshold. So Shea has qualified. Jaylen Brown has already qualified. And the reason this comes up, though, is because last night, Luka Doncic, first of all, Victor Wembanyama sat out of the Spurs blowout win of the Clippers, but he could afford to miss 3 games headed into last night. Now he can afford to miss 2 of the Spurs' final 5. But Luka pulled his hamstring. And so if you see the bottom of this list, after we go through Shea, Victor, Nikola Jokic, and Jaylen Brown, Luka and Cade Cunningham, we put Cade back on this just for the display of this 65-game rule minimum. Luka, with that hamstring injury yesterday, Lakers have 5 more games. He can afford to miss 4 of them. If he misses all of them, he can't qualify either now. Cade, with the collapsed lung, he's not going to get there. In fact, the Pistons play tomorrow. He will be disqualified tomorrow. Poor Cade Cunningham with the collapsed lung. But anyway, this gets back to that 65-game minimum, this floor that the NBA instituted to try to prevent, or it was counter to load management. All it has done is shown us, and maybe to the good, that load management is a bunch of bunk, because when these guys want to play and have to play, they do play. But the downside of this is these are legit injuries that these guys are getting disqualified by. Not that Cade Cunningham would have won it, but it has all NBA implications for Cade Cunningham. Mm-hmm. Not that Luka might have won it. Maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't have, but it has all NBA implications for a guy like Luka Doncic. And just, you know, we bring it up because of the Timmy Bontemps straw poll, and so it has betting implications. Shea, minus 600, which kind of reflects the straw poll. Victor Wembanyama, 4-1. And then it's Jokic at 100-1 and Jaylen Brown at 500-1, just looking at FanDuel and DraftKings numbers. In other words, it looks like a two-man race, not only on the straw poll, but now also in the betting market, now that Luka is basically, I mean, he's off the board everywhere. Yeah. He could, you know, I wonder what the Lakers will do. It's a hamstring injury. You know how pesky those are. And the Lakers really have to think about the playoffs. I mean, the Luka MVP or all NBA candidacy is the second,
totally,
you know, thought in this, not even close to the first thought.
He was probably a long shot anyways.
He was. Well, I mean, all NBA is a different thing. But right. May they play him in the last game of the season just to make him eligible? I don't know. The frustration, we'll just sort of say this, because what we deal with off-air doing this, this has been the reason beyond the fact that, yes, it may have countered load management, but B, the bad part is that it's penalizing guys with legitimate injuries. The third part of this is no one knows what the actual rules are. Kelly and I will speak for you here, we are about as pedantic as it comes when it comes to the rules on this stuff. But there have been several times this year where we have had to adjust. So it's not only 65 games, it's a minimum of 20 minutes in those 65 games. You will see that Ant Edwards got hurt the other night for the Timberwolves, and all the articles that came out said, well, he's ineligible. But if you actually added up the remaining games for the T-Wolves and how many games Ant Edwards had played in, you would have actually said, reading the article, why is he ineligible? Seems like he can be eligible if he played in the remaining games. What no article said, until one retroactively, I saw this morning, I found a CBS article that pointed out, what they didn't say is that, oh yeah, in like the third game of the year, Ant only played a few minutes, or 5 minutes or less, or something like that. So he's ineligible because that game doesn't count towards the 65 games. So what drives me crazy, I used to think this as a kid, when like the Bullets or the Skins were like in a playoff race, they would never explain what tiebreaker they won or lost on it. It would drive me crazy. In those days, you had an excuse because there was something called the internet that didn't exist yet. Here you have no excuse. So in the case of Luka Doncic, he played two games of between 15 to 19 minutes. You get two exceptions. Shout out Kelly Bidlin for finding this. You get two exceptions below 20 minutes of between 15 to 19 minute games. Those do count towards it. So Luka, again, can afford to miss all but one more. So he gets credit for two games where he didn't get the 20 minutes. And the other thing is, Victor Wembanyama actually has only played in 61 games. The 62nd game is this NBA World Cup final that we attended and saw with our own eyes. But it doesn't exist in game logs, and the stats don't count, but the game counts towards the 65 games. There's all kinds of things about this.
Yep.
Oh, there's one other thing. If you played 62 games and you had a season-ending injury, they might let you through if it was earlier in the season when it counted for 80% of all the games you played. But Luka had the audacity to pull his hamstring too late to fall under that.
Cade would qualify, I believe,
Cade would have,
but
he didn't get to 65 games.
Right.
Anyway, all that to say, the straw poll shows that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at minus 600, if you are to believe the straw poll, which I'm not sure I do, to say it, he's at minus 600, Victor Wembanyama, 4-1. But it is a two-man race, I think.
Yeah, I think there's, and we could probably talk a bit more about this after the break. I think it's worth pointing out how many people, like if I had to fill out a ballot, this would be really close. And it would probably be Shai on top for me. So I think it could swing. Also, it is worth noting, though, this is a straw poll. This is nothing official. However, it's been 5 years in a row where he's gotten MVP and runner-up exactly dead on.
Okay. He thinks he's Tom Tango. He thinks he's Tom Tango. Is that what he thinks he is?
Except for he hates the betting implications of it.
Oh, see, I hate people like that. Anyway, you won't get that kind of pedantic breakdown anywhere else. We'll talk Rookie of the Year and more next on A Numbers Game. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Free picks backed by real analysis. That's just win bets, baby. That's just win bets, baby. Mathematical models and AI-driven best bets across NFL, college hoops, NBA, NHL, UFC, soccer, and more. Plus a live weekend preview every Friday. Subscribe on YouTube, follow on X, and get their free daily best bets newsletter at justwinbetsbaby.com. These two gentlemen have names that we can share with folks?
Picks in English and Spanish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, Joe DeFan, Shane O'Mack, and the Wiseman. I'm saying from the Just Win Bets Baby podcast.
So what does that mean? They're like, take the Giants tonight in baseball over the Mets? Or Los Gigantes? They do that kind of thing?
I was going to say, I thought we did a pretty good job of doing en Espanol, but right. Apparently not.
Scan the QR code for more information if we throw that back on the screen at justwinbetsbaby.com. Give you one extra second to scan it, then there you go.
Yeah, shout out to those guys. We have some hats, I believe, from them waiting downstairs.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Appreciate the hats.
I think Greg got some beer.
Let's get your names in the promo next time, though. Let's give you guys some juice. Let's talk Final Four, our favorite. Get to talk to him almost every Friday here for the last month.
Yeah.
This has been great. Really appreciate his time. You can see him, of course, on Turner Sports and Sirius XM College Sports as well on the radio side. Follow him on Twitter at Dallin Cuff. That's DalenCuff. It is, coincidentally, Dallin Cuff, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, sir?
Good. I'm a little wistful. As you just said, we've been talking every week, and this may be the end of that. We do have the World Cup coming up, boys, so keep you in mind.
You're getting calls. Don't worry. Yep.
We're working on trying to cover that for a couple different places. We'll come back to that off air when that thing happens. But also, Just Win Bets, baby, that in English and Spanish, like, I am very interested. Are we doing like a pod and we speak in English and then running it back in Spanish?
Right.
Those guys are doing that.
That's what I want to
know. That's really impressive stuff.
I think that's what's going on.
Or is it sentence by sentence translation, which could be highly annoying? I don't know. That's why we got to do it.
I don't want to see Los Gigantes and El Heat. What I'm talking about. I'm out. Los Lakers.
Or like a bastardized English accent where it happens. Yeah, we don't want that. All right, Dallin, I don't know if you know this, but the Final Four is tomorrow. This just in. Let's start with the first one, which is the little, not the main event, I guess, if you want to do this in boxing terms or in UFC terms, but it's Illinois and UConn, the winner of which will be in the national championship nonetheless on Monday night. The Illini are favored by 1.5. The total's 139.5. You have pretty strong conviction on this.
Yeah, I like Illinois a lot here. I'm going to take them on the money line. It's a little bit of juice, obviously, but not much relative to the situation here. The public is on UConn, and rightfully so. They know them. They've won two of the last three championships. They just saw them beat Duke. But even things like KenPom's number's 4. Very rarely do we see that big of a delta between KenPom's line and Vegas's line in a situation like this in this Final Four. It just doesn't happen that often. I think that's indicative of, Vegas protecting themselves a little bit, that a lot of public money is going to come in on UConn. I think Illinois is better suited to win this game. I think they've learned from that experience. They played them in December, remember, and Illinois lost that game. It was a double-digit loss. Game was closer than that. Malachi Smith had a crazy double pump shot from 30 feet out at the end of the shot clock that kind of gave them a 9-point advantage and effectively ended the game. And they spread it out from there. But Illinois at that time, Keaton Wagler was not the Keaton Wagler he is now. They were still finding themselves and developing. UConn, conversely, was playing really their best basketball when you look back on it, even with some injuries they were dealing with in December and early January. Like they have not played well. Like they beat Duke without playing well. They were 1-for-18 from the three-point line the first 33 minutes of that game. They missed 2-for-4 free throws down the stretch, but they found a way to win, and they do have that championship medal. They are not going away. This is not going to be easy, and Illinois has to handle the physicality on the perimeter. They didn't do that very well in December. They weren't able to run their offense the way they wanted to. Stojakovic was still getting back healthy too. So I think this Illinois team has improved greatly. They are much different. They're much better defensively. I think this game's going to be determined by the points in the paint and by the free throw line. If Illinois can get fouled, they do not foul a lot, so that may make it harder for UConn to score. And UConn's ability to make, they have to make shots, and I just don't see them making enough. And Illinois' ability to space you out, they will make more shots. UConn made 10 threes in the first game. Again, they've struggled much more than I thought, guys. At this point, I thought their offense would be better. It just not hit the ceiling that I thought it would hit. I mean, they're still capable. They have not shown it. They have not played particularly well, despite getting themselves all the way to a Final Four. I like Illinois a lot here.
You alluded to this on air. We also talked a little bit about it off air, which is this notion of championship medal for UConn. So what I'm gleaning from this is you buy into it to a certain extent, obviously not to the point that you take them here against Illinois. Maybe the other way to question it or to phrase it in a question is, if UConn doesn't have this pedigree of having won two championships in the last 3 years, and this is the exact same matchup, you probably view this much differently, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the number would reflect it. I think Vegas and the public would not be on UConn the way they are. The public would not be on UConn the way they are. Anybody you talk to that's a casual fan that just assumes UConn's going to be the favorite here. Everybody that I've talked to that's not really into betting, they're like, UConn's the underdog? It's this shock that could happen. Nah, man, that is priced appropriately, and you guys are responding the way that I think Vegas thinks you're going to respond, which you're all a lot in on UConn. And the championship medal is something they showed against Duke, and that's great. I just don't think that, and physically, the size, they're the smallest team in this Final Four by a large margin. Illinois is the biggest team in the country. Like, there's a lot to overcome. And what we saw in December, again, was not what we're going to see in April, I believe, in terms of these two teams.
All right, so Illinois there. You go money line, or would you lay the 1.5? What do you say there?
I had money line, but again, because it was minus 125. I think, again, this is where I'm giving still a little love to UConn. It's not going to be easy to beat these guys. Like, it's going to be a battle. I just think Illinois survives that battle.
Okay. Main event. Maybe I shouldn't call it that. Maybe it's offensive to Illinois and UConn.
It's the main event.
It's the main event. The formula says it's the main event. Michigan favored by 1.5 over Arizona. Total at 157.5. The spread is the same as the first game, but the total much, much different. Way higher. This was Arizona initially when this line first came out, Dallin. Arizona was a 1.5-point favorite. It quickly moved over to Michigan, and it has stayed there since.
Yeah, I don't love that because I like Arizona, but that's just, maybe you guys can tell me, the last time we've had both Final Four games being 1.5 spread, it doesn't seem very recent to me.
No.
And with teams of this caliber, like it's the quality of team we have in it too, and then these both are kind of coin flip games. This is a Spider-Man meme game. These teams are mirror images of each other. They have size in the interior, both the 4 and the 5 spot. They can play in a transitional game. They can play in a half court game. They've got really good guard play. Really good wing play, I should say, too. They got depth off the bench. I think the kind of a deciding factor here for me is Jaden Bradley. I think the guy's the best closer and finisher in college basketball. He's been that way in terms of finisher and finishing games. And he's been that way since the first game of the season. When they need him to make a play offensively or defensively, he does it. There's a reason he's the Big 12 player of the year without being his team's leading scorer or the best player in the conference. He's the best playmaker and makes things happen on both sides of the ball. Elie Cadeau, obviously, he's all reports. Part of my folks I work with at Sirius saw him yesterday, and everybody saw him yesterday. He's fully healthy. He's good after this allergic reaction he had in the hospitalization. But he has had some bad games in big moments. And they play that drop coverage. If he's able to come off and shoot it confidently and not turn it over and help lead them, then that goes a long way for Michigan. I am basically looking at that point guard matchup. I like Jaden Bradley a lot more. I think I know what you're going to get from him. I think Cadeau is a question mark. The other part of Michigan is they have to value possessions. They can have turnover issues. They're about 160th in the nation in offensive turnover rate. Not that Arizona's game plan defensively is to get out and turn you over, but they can be lackadaisical with the ball. And they have to be really, really sharp in this game to hit their ceiling. And I just like Arizona's consistency. They've been the most consistent team over the course of the season. I think they'll be the most consistent through this 40 minutes. And this game is going to come down to out-executing your opponent. And the little things will matter. The offensive rebounds, the loose balls, who wins the battle at the free throw line. It's going to be a battle back and forth. And I just like Arizona and their consistency a little bit more. But this is going to be an awesome game.
If we did the old Jimmy the Greek Brent Musburger NFL Today board with the check marks, and I had Tommy Lloyd on one side and Dustin May on the other, who gets the check mark?
Man, it's a good question. I mean, Tommy's been to two of these as an assistant coach. Dusty's been here as a head coach, obviously, with FAU. Who gets the check mark? I think that they're both outstanding coaches. And here, I don't even know if it's, again, about adjustments you're going to make. I think you know what you're going to see. It's up to your dudes to go play. Like, this is a player's play game to me. Like, you've got the right players. You run the right systems. You run good stuff. Obviously, your out-of-timeout actions will be critical, and I think that's important. And how they maybe have to handle some foul trouble. That's also important, how this game will be officiated. So if a Daimara picks up a couple or Krivas picks up a couple, that does change the way these teams operate. So that's something to pay attention to, too. We had Mark Few on the show, SiriusXM show we do yesterday here in Indy. He made a good point, guys. Remember, like, the coming out game for Michigan was Gonzaga when they beat him by, like, 40. And he said the first possession, Lendeborg hits a step back three from 27 feet. And he thought, that looks like a guy that's a USA basketball player with me this past summer. Like, what the hell is that? And he goes, and they went on to just destroy us and just shoot the heck out of it. He said to Tommy, I had dinner with Tommy yesterday, and told him that if these guys are making threes, look out. And obviously Mark had a front row seat to that, one of their best performances of the year. So to that point, though, too, I think the wings of Michigan are important, but how Arizona defends them, and you've got to contest them. You want to make these guys shoot contested twos. If they are in a groove, as I already mentioned, if Cadeau's hitting threes, and then Barnett's hitting a couple, and then you got this groove going, and Lendeborg, you'd rather have him trying to make tough twos than hit open threes or get to the rim. If you can make that tough for them, it goes a long way. But that's what makes this game fun. I'm going to say out-execute. If Michigan's shooting it hot, I mean, Mark said it, going to be Hall of Famer. Look out. But I just want to see how Arizona counters. It's going to be an awesome game. Heavyweight battle. It is the feature game.
All right. If Illinois and Arizona do win, as you suggest, though, you got Arizona winning it all, I assume?
Yeah, I like Arizona in that game. I think they're slightly more talented. I think they're slightly more deeper in terms of what they can bring off the bench. But again, I think it'll be an outstanding game. And I hope we see it, because my money's on Arizona.
Dallin, thank you so much. Enjoy the games.
All right, boys.
Coming back on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM Channel 158. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. We are truly grateful, not just something I say haphazardly.
Mm-hmm.
Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, still to come. Are we sure? Going to do a little version of Are We Sure coming up. We haven't done that in a while, it feels like. Though someone might tell me, no, actually, you did it last week, Gil. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd believe them.
Yeah. By the way, Numbers Game brought to you by Profit X. We will also have Fezzik here for Fezzik Fridays. Usually I would read tweets here, but as we just sort of determined off air, got a lot to talk about with this gentleman here, because we actually want to get to actual baseball, but we must cover ABS with him. It's Joe Sheehan, everybody, kind enough to join us this morning. The Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, available at joesheehan.com. You can follow Joe on Twitter at joe_Sheehan. Joe, good morning to you.
Morning, Gil. What's going on?
How you doing? Well, you said it off air. Every hit you've done, all anybody wants to talk about is the ABS system. You were here opening day. Actually, we had the one game played the previous night, I think, and then you were here opening day last week. So we'll get into some of your baseball, your actual baseball thoughts team-wise here momentarily. But what about ABS? Your reaction, I'll just leave it open-ended for you.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty popular. MLB has tested this in the minor leagues for a long time now, so they had a pretty good sense of how it's going to go. But you don't know when you test in the minor leagues, guys, the outcomes just don't matter. And I think the ABS is just part of the entertainment value. Oh, let's all look up at the screen and see if the umpire got it right or wrong. And I think when the games, the pitches, the challenges have a little more importance to people, it's a little bit different. And we've seen, you know, a lot of overturns. It's, the rate is only about 53%, I want to say. MLB keeps a great these numbers. They track these numbers for players, for pitchers, for catchers, for hitters. So the overturn rate's only about half. But think about it. If you get two wrong challenges a game, that's four. If you get four of them right, that's eight. Like, you're talking about a lot of challenges. And if you get a situation where the umpire is missing a lot of pitches, we saw C.B. Bucknor. We saw, I believe it was opening, Mike Estabrook with the Yankee in the Yankee game.
Yes.
You can see a lot of challenges happen. It becomes a big part of the experience.
Do you think the fans will enjoy this as much as the summer wears on?
I do think the production of it is a little bit overdone. I wrote yesterday, like, I'm got to be saying, I'm a little sick of that T-Mobile pink. And every time we have a challenge, the umpire, we're challenging this call and we all look at the scoreboard and it's a 15-second production when really all it needs to be is the, you know, they buzz down to the umpire and say ball or strike and we move on. I think that's gotten a little old for me already. In fairness, I watch a lot of baseball. I think if you're new to it, I think if you're somebody who goes to a game once a week, once a month, it's not going to get as old. MLB, I think, would prefer to keep the system. The players are strong advocates of this system as opposed to a full ABS because they want to keep a certain amount of control. And let's not forget, guys, most of the union, a majority of the union is pitchers and catchers. And they all want to keep framing in the game. So this keeps an element of framing in the game. So I think there's a lot of inertia once you have this system in place to keep it in place.
Yeah, keeps framing in the game in the sense that there's a limited amount of challenges, you mean? That framing can actually still, because if they did it, if it was carte blanche to do it, framing would disappear entirely, right?
Exactly. All you would be worried about is where did the ball cross the plate. You still have an element of, because hitters are at risk. I mean, I've seen, if anything, I think hitters are probably not challenging enough. There have been a lot of calls. You look at the pitch and go, oh, you got to challenge that. And they don't because there's the scarcity to it. If you blow a challenge, that's costly. If you blow a challenge in the third inning, if you blow a challenge with nobody on and two outs, that's something you don't have later in a higher leverage spot.
Absolutely. For San Francisco Giants fans like myself, with Patrick Bailey behind home plate, we love framing, that's for sure. Okay, well, what about baseball in general? Let's go to the actual game itself. Your one-week reactions, and I'll phrase it like this. Give me the team or teams that you're looking at that you're like, oh, wow, that could be a thing. Obviously, we don't want to overreact to too small of a sample size, but that has raised an eyebrow either to the good or bad that you didn't necessarily expect to see at this point.
Yeah, I think you want to be careful because schedule affects a lot of it, right? The Marlins are 5-1, but they basically played a minor league rehab schedule playing the Rockies and the White Sox. So I do think their offense has been interesting. You know, Liam Hicks has taken a step forward. They've got some of these like older veterans, young players who haven't played a whole lot, Griffin Conine, Graham Pauly, who might be able to build an offense out of. So I think there might be something there. I'm looking at them as a team that I might've been a little bit low on in the spring. And then, you know, at the other side, the Red Sox haven't hit for a week. And I have the Red Sox as the best team in the American League this year. And if they're not going to hit, there's not really a path for them. We'll see them go up against Michael King this afternoon. Maybe they can get it going. So at the extremes, the 5-1 Marlins, the 1-5 Red Sox.
Yeah. Although the Blue Jays would probably take issue, right? They'd be like, oh, we're having trouble beating the Rockies. So maybe they're not horrific, I guess. Dodgers, the best of the bunch, though, no matter what. You still think that team is head and shoulders above?
I would be surprised if at any point during the season I didn't think the Dodgers were the worst team. Now, we've seen them have pitching injuries in previous seasons, but they've built in so much depth, guys, both offensively and on the pitching staff, that even their next tier down, when they've got to go to some of those backup pitchers and seventh, eighth, ninth starters or some of the hitters they're going to have to go to, I still think they're going to be fine. And you know, there's not really a great number two in that division. We talked in the preseason about the Diamondbacks. And I said, you know, the Diamondbacks' upside overlaps with the Dodgers' downside, and I still believe it, but I also believe there's only about a 4-5% chance that happens. So the Dodgers have built a great team. I would love to see a scenario, guys, where they went and tried to win 120 games, because I think they could do it. But with the current set of rules, all they've got to do is win their 98 to 100 games and be ready for the playoffs.
I'm with you. I'd love to see a team just go all out for something like that. We all remember the Mariners in 2000. It was just so awesome to watch, even though they didn't get to the World Series. Right. But it was just so great to great. 2000 or 2001? Did I have their year wrong?
2001. 2001. The Yankees a couple years before that.
Yeah. Okay. What about today? What did you land on today?
I mentioned the Marlins earlier and all those left-handed hitters. They play in the Yankees home opener today over in the Bronx, and I like them against Will Warren today. They're plus 150 at FanDuel. Will Warren really established himself last year, 31 starts, but he struggled against left-handers, 350 OBP, just less than a 2-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio. The Marlins are going to run six lefties at him today. And more importantly, they got Yuri Perez on the mound. And I've got Yuri Perez actually as a potential Cy Young candidate. Stepped up last year, finally healthy, was dominant down the stretch. I like him to take on the Yankees today. I think the Marlins will score 3 to 4 runs, and that's going to be plenty.
Plus 150 on the Marlins today, this afternoon in the Bronx. And then speaking of the Dodgers, which I spoke of earlier, you want to play them a certain way today.
Yeah, I got burned on opening day with the Nationals bullpen. I like the Cubs team total over, and the Nationals bullpen came out and threw 5 1/3 innings of one-run ball. And I don't think they've gotten an out since. We saw them blow up against the Phillies on Wednesday afternoon. I'm fading them all year long. They're 29th right now in Fangraphs WAR. The Pirates bullpen has actually been worse. Plus, you've got Miles Mikolas on the mound. He's one of the worst starters in baseball. Give me the Dodgers team total over. I got him as low as -130 at 5.5. I think that was also at FanDuel. If you want to go to 6.5 at plus money, I think that's actually a good play as well. This Dodger offense is one of the best in the game, and this matchup with the Nationals, Mikolas followed by that bullpen, is about as bad as it gets in baseball.
Brutality. Okay, let me ask you a question. Connor Griffin famously coming up now for the Bucks, for the Pirates, the most touted of all rookies, number one MLB prospect. Obviously, we have rookies strewn throughout Major League Baseball that have a lot of teams very excited. Do you have a thought in terms of your observation, in terms of Rookie of the Year at this point, the all too early thoughts about Rookie of the Year or any other award category at this point?
Well, my pick for Rookie of the Year in the NL was J.J. Weatherholt, and I still think that's a pretty solid selection. He's going to play second base. He had a big hit the other day to win the game for them. It's a very deep field. As far as betting's concerned, at the time I gave out Owen Casey of the Marlins. It's a Marlins theme today, I guess. He was 40-1 at the time, and I'm seeing on your screen now he's actually down to 16-1. I think he's going to play a lot. I think he's going to hit really, really good context numbers, runs and RBIs. That's the kind of thing that can help win you a Rookie of the Year award. So, you know, Casey and Weatherholt are the two guys I'm looking at. The interesting thing about the call-up of Griffin, guys, is that he had a couple of big home runs early in the spring, and that got him a lot of attention. He had a two-homer game against the Red Sox. And after that, he didn't hit well at all. Hit a 13-2 strikeout to walk ratio, which, you know, in the Grapefruit League is pretty bad. I thought it made plenty of sense for the Pirates to send him down. He did not look ready. I'm a little surprised they're calling him up. Now, he was incredible in five games of AAA. He did hit very well at 400 with walks and power, four walks and four strikeouts. And anytime you see a 20-year-old player, he's technically still 19 for a couple of weeks, having an even strikeout to walk ratio at AAA, that's an excellent sign. But I don't think he's as guaranteed to hit the ground running as a J.J. Weatherholt, as Kevin McGonigal has shown in Detroit. I think he's a little bit behind them. And again, guys, he's 19 years old today. He turns 20, I want to say on the 24th. He's the first teenager to play in the majors since Elvis Luciano, a reliever with the Blue Jays a few years back. He's the first teenage hitter since Juan Soto. And you go back, teenage hitters have an incredible track record. The simple fact of reaching the major leagues as a teenager marks you as a potential Hall of Famer. If you just know that one thing, just give me a list of guys who batted in the majors at 19 or younger. That's a list of guys who went on to have great careers.
Andrew Jones of the Braves leaps to mind in my head among those. Last thing, Joe Pita and I were texting the other day. I know you're familiar with Joe. Joe is in addition to being a great baseball handicapper, he's a lifelong Phillies fan. And right before the Phillies mounted a comeback the other day, he reverse jinxed them. But he said, he goes, I don't know, Gil, he says, these bats look old. He says, I don't care if it's Wheeler or Sanchez or whoever. They don't look that. It looks like they kind of all got old together. Not all of them, but several of them. You agree with that general directional statement?
I do. I've been down on the Phillies coming into this year because of that core of Turner, Schwarber, and Harper, who are all 33 this year. And then, of course, you know, the rest of the roster has been a problem for them for a while. They've been top heavy. You look at the Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott, JT Realmuto group. It's just not a good hitting team. So they're really going to have to be carried by that rotation and that bullpen this year. It is a more run prevention team than run scoring team at this point.
God, Bryce Harper is 33. My goodness. Yeah. Joe, enjoy the full day of baseball. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Gilly.
Joe Sheehan, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. We'll come back, Are We Sure? Next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you tired of cappers lying about their record? Juice Reel just dropped an update that makes that impossible. No more lying about records. Connect your sportsbooks directly into Juice Reel and instantly get in-depth analytics on your own betting, plus access to what the very best bettors on the platform have their money on. If you're the sharp bettor and others follow your bets, you'll get paid for helping the community win. The days of cappers faking their profits are over. Tail proven winners on Juice Reel. Download it now. That's juice like orange juice. Always appreciate the clarification. Reel, R-E-E-L.
Like a fishing reel.
As Juice Reel. Thank you. Thank you so much for that clarification, as always. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, in the hizzy. Circa Sports, Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas.
Hey, I got one more for you. Yes. And our great guest that's standing by could weigh in on this, too. But the I think the after the Cavs, the next one after last night, it's Minnesota. The sixth seed is looking real good for you right now. Real good. Because we'll get more details after MRI. It looked like pretty classic hamstring last night with Luka. It could be a couple weeks here, yeah. Minimum. And right now, yeah, you'd love to play the Lakers in the first round, I think, if you're any one of these teams out west.
Right, but they're slave to where the Lakers end up.
Correct.
So they'd be having to conceivably, by this conversation, follow what they're doing to figure out that's the whole thing. I just feel like, again, tanking is one thing. Trying to get the best record is another. We say this in the NFL. Where there's fewer teams even. We overrate seeding. I don't know if that's universally agreed upon. Let's find out what our next guest feels about that. Jonathan Von Tobel joins us. You can follow him on Twitter at MeJVT. He's the co-host of Money Moves, which he does every weekday here after Prop Points on the network with Stormy Bonatoni. And, of course, he's part of the whole Hardwood Handicappers crew as well. When he, like Kelly Bidlin, feels like showing up for Hardwood Handicappers these days. It's Jonathan Von Tobel. How you doing, JBT?
You know, there's a couple of things. First off, what would be the word that you mistake juice for? I don't think we have to answer that on the air.
That's the joke. That's right.
other one is, why would you know that, Gil? The other is, Zach the other day made a comment on his podcast where he said, you know, I'm constantly getting the times wrong with these guys joining me. Zach, I canceled one time. Like, one time, brother. I had to move
such
the
a
time.
Rep, you got
and
such
then
a
he's
rep
sitting here
it.
Giving me crap about it. So, yeah, like, I'm there all the time on Thursdays. Come on, man.
You know what, JVT? Since we're complaining real quick, I stayed up nice and late to do a guest spot last night with Dustin Sweetelson. And then as soon as I popped on, he power ranked basically the Hardwood Handicappers, and I came in number two behind Jonathan Von Tobel. I was like, oh, I'm so glad I stayed up late to be told I was the second favorite person.
Wow. Well.
And then I felt real bad for Zach, who's doing the pod every day.
Yeah. In fairness, Dustin and I do have, a somewhat strong relationship outside of work. His newly minted fiance, I believe I was one of the first VSiN people to meet her. So I think that's probably why I power rate a little bit higher.
Okay.
Do you think girls are happy when we call it newly minted fiance? Do you think they enjoy that phrasing? I wonder. I don't know.
Is there something negative that she's not watching? Although I think one of her brothers like watches every day. So
I've met her. She's lovely, by the way. Congratulations to the both of them. All right, what about seeding, John? Is that a thing or not a thing? Do we overrate that?
I mean, I think it's great for your lawn, but from a playoff standpoint, I think it really just does depend on what you're looking at from the standpoint of who you want to avoid, who you think you match up well against. I think in the NBA, it does matter to an extent. You know, for example, what side of the bracket do you want to fall on? Do you want to avoid a second-round series with the Oklahoma City Thunder, for example? I don't know, though, if I am, you know, pulling out all the stops to manifest what my seed is going to be down the stretch of a regular season, because there's so many different variables. I don't think it's really ultimately worth it. So I guess that's a roundabout way of saying, like, I think I pretty much agree with you guys. You know, if you want to try to gun for seeding, the only thing that matters in the NBA is being inside of the top six. You don't want to have to play a one-off, or I guess if you're in the top of the play-in, you don't want to have to rely on winning one and done type situations to get in. So the only seeding that I think truly would be at the top of the list is finishing inside of the top six of the NBA, and then you let the chips fall where they may.
I'm with you. That's my hunch. I think we tend to overrate it based on how a team views otherwise, even though obviously there's benefits to doing it.
I'll add, so a few years ago when the Clippers were actually okay, there was a it was when the Suns had a really strong season, and there was a lot of people going into the final game of the regular season saying, why isn't this team scoreboard watching and tanking to get out of that series with the Suns? And it was like, well, first off, you're talking about, it's not like the NFL where it's play is stagnant and you can really watch plays and, you know, see and scoreboard watch. Like, the team's going like 10-0 runs in the blink of an eye. You have no idea what's going to happen. And then, by the way, the Clippers went out one game, one in that series. And as I say, they would have totally won that series if Kawhi didn't get hurt, but whatever.
Not that he's lingering on that or anything. We're going to talk about Final Four, but since we're here, do you have anything in the NBA tonight? Have you played anything?
Not really. Today's cards kind of sucks. I mean, if we're being quite honest, I'm one that thinks that a lot of people are doing a little too much. Like, my favorite thing is the people that tell you they don't watch the NBA all of a sudden become experts on the value of the product and how well it is going over the last few weeks. But having said that, I do think you look at today and you go, holy bleep, like, what in the world am I supposed to look at here? What am I supposed to do with all of these point spreads? I guess I would say if there was one that tempted me, is New Orleans and Sacramento, only because, like, we're getting up to like that 6.5 point range. If it continues to climb, maybe Sacramento, but like, do I want to spend my Friday night sweating out Kings and Pelicans? I think I'll be okay on that one,
Yeah. Okay. To the Final Four. Let's talk about both games, Illinois and UConn. We start with the first of the two, with the Illini favored by 1.5.
Give me Illinois. I'm going to wait to see what's going to happen here. I'm going to be very curious as how this thing is going to get bet. So, like, am I going to get something cheaper on a money line by the time we get to Saturday? My guess would say yes, although I still think $1.30 is perfectly playable from a money line standpoint for the Illini. But, Gil, there's a bunch of different reasons why I do like this for the Illinois squad. The first of which is I just kind of like the simple math battle of, I get the team that's going to take a bunch of threes from beyond the arc. They take about 50% of their attempts from deep. I think that's going to help them in a matchup like this. I know a lot of people have brought up the cavernous backdrop and playing in a football arena and all these sort of things. Tom Crean was on the network, had a great answer about that. He's like, look, you're going to get run throughs in this arena. Like, you're going to be out there. They're going to put the lights up just like it is, all these sort of things. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I would also say the reason why I like Illinois is I kind of like the paint by numbers approach, in that even if they have an inefficient day, from just a pure makes standpoint, they should still have an edge over UConn, who has not shot the ball particularly well here in this tournament. They're about a 34-35% three-point shooting team on the season with lesser efficiency. So I think that helps Illinois out. They're also really big. They can match up front. They at least should not get destroyed by Terrace Reed like he has been doing to almost every single one of these opponents up to this point right now. And I also think that while Hurley deserves all the credit in the world for being such a great coach, I also think that we probably shouldn't throw Brad Underwood out. I mean, Underwood's a pretty good coach in his own right and has proven to be pretty formidable in that regard. So to me, it's Illinois. And I see you throwing this up right now. Circa's got minus 125 on the money line. I guess that with UConn being a pretty public dog, if you will, you might get something cheaper on the money line. So I will be on Illinois money line on Saturday, just waiting to see what the low point's going to be there.
All right. What about Michigan and Arizona? The Wolverines, after initial open, where Arizona, initial open being redundant, but when Arizona was a 1.5-point favorite, quickly went to Michigan as a 1.5-point favorite. It has stayed there the whole way through. This total way higher, 157.5. And keep in mind, John, we are tied with you in points for the bracket challenge, so we're listening intently.
Oh, I forgot about that. Are we tied? I thought I was like in second or something like that. Either way, pushes should be worth half points in contests going forward. Yep. I will just state that.
Yeah, we agree.
Everybody agrees.
Yeah. But anyway, for this is a stick to my guns play, guys. Like, I've been, and this is not anything, crazy. I have said that Arizona is the best team in the country for a long time now. In my bracket and before the tournament started, they were my national champion selection. I see no reason the way they've played up to this point to come off of that against Michigan. Burries is awesome. Their leading scorer. He's really come along here. Same thing with Coe Pete. The two young guys are absolutely tremendous. if Michigan's going to turn the ball over like they have a penchant for doing, then this is a great situation for Arizona, who loves to get out and run, is very athletic. You know, the one thing that does worry me is, as we were kind of talking about with Illinois, they only take about a quarter of their attempts from three. So if they do, for some reason, get bit by this bug of playing in that arena, well, that's really bad for a team that doesn't take a ton. But either way, I think Arizona is just the best team in the country. And I think they're very athletic. They got the size defensively to match up with Michigan, too. I refuse to budge here on my thought that Arizona is going to win this whole thing. So we go Wildcats.
Yes, you are a point behind both primetime numbers game and prop points. Just to clarify, okay. Money
that's
moves.
Fourth place.
In the Circa College Hoops Challenge, though, JVT, you are only 3 points behind the lead. You got a shot in that?
I think I do. I mean, I guess technically I would have to go. So we only have three picks left, though. That's the problem. So, like, I would have to go, like, 3-0, and then I may or may not have submitted my tiebreaker. I probably won't be able to win this thing. Yeah. That's my bad. I mean, in fairness, our tiebreaker was our Final Four, which is published in the college basketball or NCAA March Madness betting guide. So, like, I don't know why I had to re-email it to Matt Eubanks for it to count, but I guess it would.
Chris Massaro, by the way, in a tie with Paul Stone atop the Circa College Hoops Challenge, the Eubanks Invitational. If you will, JVT, right. three points back. And then real quick, just to clarify, then winning it all, you have?
I'll go with Arizona, although I'll say really quickly, a lot of people keep going, this is the national championship. It's kind of tough. If this is a war that we expect it to be, and then you just get a day off to go play on Monday, like, I don't know if that's just going to be a chalk it up to the winner here. So I'll be interested to see how Monday looks. But yes, Arizona for me.
I agree. We're all too premature on that.
That's a great point, too. It's that kind of physical battle, right? You only get a day off.
I will
I make
say
a lot
again.
Of great points.
Man,
that's why you're number one, man.
Sorry, Jonathan Montoble. I make great points. That's his little subtitle. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, as always.
See you guys in a little bit.
Money moves coming up after prop points here on the show. JBT will be in the host chair today. Let's do Are We Sure? Next on A Numbers Game.